WJR's Today's Woman, hosted by Dr. Carol Kowalczyk. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. It's all about supporting women and their careers and at home. The show will focus on educating and inspiring women to be the best they can be.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller.
Tonight, we'll talk about National Women's Health Week and the importance of empowering women to make their health a priority. We'll speak with the director of neurology at Beaumont Grosse Pointe. We'll also talk to Jamie and Jan about their unique path to parenthood through adoption and IVF. Keep listening. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. This evening, we're talking with Dr. James Voci, Director of Neurology at Beaumont Grosse Pointe and Associate Professor of Neurology at Oakland University, William Beaumont School of Medicine, about National Stroke Awareness Month. Visit MIFertility.com to learn more about our sponsor, Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health.
So Stroke Awareness Month is very, very important, and stroke is a leading cause of death in the U.S. for both men and women, especially as we age. It occurs when a blood vessel in the brain bursts, or more commonly, when a blockage develops. Without treatment, cells in the brain quickly begin to die, causing serious disability or death. Thus, seeking medical attention quickly is crucial and why we should all be aware of the symptoms. So Dr. Voci, thank you so much for being on the show to make us all aware of this condition and help us to optimize our health and also be aware of these certain symptoms and things like that. But before we do that, can you give me a little background on your area of expertise and what made you decide to become a neurologist?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me, and I'm glad to be here. So, yes, I am a neurologist, and as neurologists, we deal with disorders of the central and peripheral nervous system. So this will include the brain, the spinal cord, the peripheral nerves, and the muscles that are controlled by them. Now, why I went into neurology? That's a more difficult question, but the brain is by far the most complex organ in the body. It is what makes us who we are. And I remember back in medical school, I was in awe when I listened to my first lecture on the development of the nervous system, and it's been true love ever since then. I've never looked back.
Well, and you know what? I almost failed my neuro in medical school, so maybe that's why God gave me the fertility brain and you the neurology brain, because God bless you. I cannot, the neurons and all that stuff, I was like, I don't know. So anyway, go ahead, Dana.
So Dr. Voci, what are possible signs of a stroke?
Well, the signs of the stroke will basically include any impairment that of anything that the brain controls. So the most recognized symptoms we tend to see are weakness on one side of the body or the other, especially involving the face. So when one tries to smile, the smile will appear crooked. After that, we will tend to see numbness on one side of the body or speech and language difficulties. So speech is the motor articulation, but language is actual true understanding of what's being said to you and knowing what you want to say. So they may have difficulties not just in terms of getting the words out clearly, but knowing what to say or understanding what is being told to them. Mm-hmm. We may also see in coordination and balance issues. So one's balance may be off, it may be falling. And finally, vision impairment in the form of either a loss of vision to one side or the other, or with one eye, or double vision.
Mm-hmm. And who's at risk?
So the most common risk factors, and here you have to sort of separate out the two main types of stroke. So there is the leading cause, which is atherosclerosis or hardening of the arteries. There we tend to see this occurring in people with hypertension, diabetes, hyperlipidemia, and those who use tobacco products. For embolic strokes, and that's the second major cause of strokes, this is where a plaque or clot of blood dislodges either from the heart or from a vessel and goes up to the brain and blocks the vessel. In that situation, an irregular heart rhythm and something in particular that we call atrial fibrillation which is where the upper chambers of the heart beat very rapidly but ineffectively, this poses the greatest risk for clots breaking off and going up to the brain.
Wow.
So, doctor, what can we do to prevent a stroke? Is there any lifestyle changes we can make or drugs we can take?
Yes. Yeah, so risk reduction is what stroke care is all about. So for those with blood pressure or diabetes or abnormal cholesterol, you have it in your power to manage this in conjunction with your doctor, either with medications, but also with exercise and activity and stopping bad habits. Tobacco does nothing good for the body. It does an excessive amount of damage to your blood vessels. And this is something that, you know, you control and you should be able to stop. But beyond that, yes, it is lifestyle changes. Exercise is crucial. You need to avoid a sedentary lifestyle. For those with risk factors and with strong family histories of heart disease or stroke, taking an aspirin every day, along with healthy eating and stress reduction, will also go a long way to helping reduce your risk of stroke.
So that's a full aspirin and not a baby aspirin?
Well, that's a difficult question. It still has yet to be determined. But in general, a baby aspirin or 81 milligrams daily is probably going to be sufficient for most people. Mm-hmm. Because the risk of gastrointestinal or stomach upset with a full aspirin every day does increase. And data suggests that the baby aspirin or 81 milligrams likely will afford enough protection without causing undue stomach upset.
Got it. So what do we do? We're sitting next to someone and things are happening that we think they might have a stroke. And I have to tell you, Dr. Voci, you know, I'm really grateful that you're taking care of people in my family. But my aunt mm-hmm. and uncle were at home, and the guy, you talk about smoking, he admits to 4 cigars a day. And in the bathroom, he just collapsed mm-hmm. almost before midnight. Okay. And she, what's wrong? He was kind of irrational, couldn't really mm-hmm. speak coherently and kind of slumped. And she called 911 mm-hmm. and got him in. And, you know, he's right now paralyzed on the left side, but he's working on getting better. So we're sitting in a theater, we're sitting at the restaurant, we're sitting at home. How can we determine if someone's having a stroke, and what do we do?
So, you know, the simplest rule is if something looks abnormal or unusual, assume it is, and you know, worry about it. You know, I mean, act now. Worry mm-hmm. about whether or not it's a stroke later. So you get him into the hospital and get him in quickly. Time is crucial. So when you're with someone and all of a sudden you might notice an uneven face or a crooked smile, if they're slumping to one side, if their speech is changing, or if they just get confused, especially in the elderly, small strokes can present as just a confusional state. Act quickly. Get him into the hospital. Nobody's going to fault you for getting them in quickly. You know, we can't do much if you wait till the morning or the next day to bring them in. There's little we can do at that point. So the treatment options really are inherently dependent upon the time factor. So the past few years, we've seen the growth in the use of what are called thrombolytics, but more commonly in the lay public known as the clot-busting medications. These can be administered by an intravenous route through a vein, but they will only work if we get to you within a certain time period, and we need to get to you and get you assessed and analyzed within 3, sometimes 4.5 hour window. Anything beyond that, the use of intravenous clot-busting medications becomes too risky because it can cause bleeding complications. Now, if someone does make it in and they have certain situations where we identify there's a big clot in a vessel in the brain, there are what we now call interventional approaches. And this is where you can actually go in with a catheter, like you're doing a heart catheterization, and you can either deliver the clot-busting medication by catheter, meaning so you deliver it right where it's needed as opposed to giving it in and letting it go all over the body. Here it gets delivered right to the source. But newer techniques are allowing the interventionalist, the radiologist or neurosurgeon, to go in and actually retrieve the clot. They can actually put a little skewer into it and pull it out and reopen, and it's reestablished blood flow. But beyond that, if you come in after that, you know, certain time window, there is little we can do. We will probably administer aspirin and a cholesterol-lowering drug, and then undergo a workup to identify the source of the stroke. You know, was it from the heart? Was it from the carotid arteries in the neck? Or was it from something else? But if you're at home or you're at a restaurant and you see something unusual, you know, just act quickly, call 911, get them to the hospital. And if by chance you or someone has aspirin on hand, administer an aspirin then and there en route or before they go to the hospital. That may be a life-saving treatment.
Well, Dr. Voci, what is the person feeling, though? Because what if you're alone? What if you're at home alone? What does someone who is having a stroke, what do they feel?
So unfortunately, they may not notice anything. That's the unfortunate part. Now, if the stroke affects the language area, they may notice they can't get words out. Mm-hmm. But if it's preventing them from getting the words out, they may not be able to call for help. Mm-hmm. If it's weakness, they should be able to know it, but sometimes they don't. Because of how the brain is structured, you can sometimes get what we call neglect, where in addition to being weak or incoordinated on one side, the brain and the body are also unaware of that impairment. Mm-hmm. So it makes it a challenge for the patient. But sometimes the person will notice something's off. I had a patient just this weekend who she knew something was wrong when she was driving a car and crashed mm-hmm. into another car. Mm-hmm. She had a loss of her vision to the right side, and she didn't see the car as she started to veer to the right side. Mm-hmm. But before that, she was completely unaware that she had any vision impairment because she still had her central vision. She could read. She could look straight ahead.
Wow.
But her peripheral vision was impaired. So they may or may not have a symptom. And mm-hmm. that's what makes it so challenging, but that's what makes it so imperative. If you're the loved one or a friend and you think something is wrong, just assume it's wrong. Get help. Get into the emergency room.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more questions for Dr. Voci on this subject of stroke. You're listening to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. James Voci, Director of Neurology at Beaumont Grosse Pointe and Associate Professor of Neurology at Oakland University William Beaumont School of Medicine. We're talking about stroke, Dr. Carol. We had a few more questions for him. And Dr. Voci, what do you wish your patients knew about this condition before coming to see you?
And what we mean by that is they've had the stroke. Mm-hmm. It's been diagnosed in the hospital. Now they're seeing you for a follow-up, and they're paralyzed on the left side.
Okay.
What happens at this point? How long for a recovery? Do they recover? What do you tell them?
So what, since most strokes are treated in the hospital, the initial thrust of the investigation is identifying where the stroke came from. But once that has been established, aggressive measures are made to establishing the rehabilitation potential of each person. So therapists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, speech therapists will all work with the patient. And then at that point, we try to make a determination as to what level of rehabilitation will be needed once they leave the hospital. Some folks will go to an inpatient setting, to a rehabilitation hospital. Others will go to what we call a subacute setting, in essence, like a modified nursing home that has rehab, maybe not as aggressive as that in a true rehab center. Others will go home and have therapy done in the home or outpatient. And then we push as much as we can, because unfortunately we can't always predict the extent of recovery. We know that most of the recovery from a stroke occurs within the first few weeks to few months. We have a good sense of where we're going to be by the end of 6 months, But recovery from a stroke can take as long as 12 to 18 months, sometimes even longer.
Wow.
Part of what the person is doing, though, is that in working with the therapist, they're learning what I call adaptive compensation. There are some impairments that won't go away, and the person has to learn to adapt and compensate to the impairment so that they can try to resume as normal a lifestyle as possible. So part of that adaptive compensation may mean learning to use aids for walking or learning how to pivot when they're trying to get from a chair to to the bed or vice versa. So it is retraining the body to learn to do what it took for granted in the past, but now with an impairment. So you're learning to work with your body's best potential given the amount of impairment you have. So some people don't get any recovery, some get complete recovery. And a lot will depend upon the geography of the stroke, meaning where did it hit, how large was it, and a lot will depend upon if the stroke affects the comprehension and language center of the brain, because if it does, then the person may not be able to understand the rehabilitation that is needed.
Mm-hmm.
So many factors go into determining the extent of recovery, but ultimately it still boils down to time and effort. Person must, be willing to put in the effort to work and understand that it is going to take time.
So, what other conditions do you have a passion about in the neurological fields that you treat?
Well, so neurology, unfortunately, involves a lot of illnesses that can be very devastating. But our goal as neurologists is to try to help modify those conditions and make them as manageable as possible. So in our practice, we deal a lot with memory disorders. So I've done a lot with Alzheimer's disease and other what we call dementias, where there's cognitive impairment. But we also see a lot of patients, especially here in Michigan, with multiple sclerosis. Michigan's a fairly endemic area for that. And there's been a lot of new and innovative therapies to try to help modify the immune system in people with multiple sclerosis. And finally, headache. It's a huge, huge problem. The understanding of what causes headache has improved dramatically over the past 10 to 15 years. And several new therapies are coming out, and a few more are due out. And it's actually quite an exciting time for neurology. We have some really innovative therapies that are making their way down the research pipeline, and we hope in the next few years they can really alter the course of many of these otherwise disabling and devastating illnesses.
So how can someone get in touch with you, Dr. Voce, if they'd like to make an appointment with your office?
Well, yes, we're in the Yellow Pages, but otherwise, I guess we can be Googled as well. But our phone number is 586-445-9900. We're located mostly on the east side in St. Clair Shores in Clinton Township in Utica. We're relatively convenient for most people to get to.
Well, thank you so much for providing all this great information. I think everyone listening has someone that they're worried about or that has been involved with healing from a stroke. So I really, really appreciate all the valuable information. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. Tonight, we're talking with Jamie and Jan, who are here to tell us about their unique journey to parenthood. First, you can visit MIFertility.com to learn more about our sponsor, Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health, or you can call 248-864-5900. That's 248-864-5900. Welcome to Today's Woman, Jamie and Jan.
Jamie, we'll start with you. Can you tell us a little about your path to parenthood?
Yeah, so Jan and I, like most couples, decided when we were going to start trying to have a baby, which was a couple years after we were married. We thought it was going to be something that was easy, and So we said, oh, we'll try on this date, and nothing was happening. We weren't getting pregnant for months and then a year. So we started an infertility workup, both on myself and on Jan, just at my OBGYN and then his urologist.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't really getting any answers, but it seemed that it was probably a issue on his side. So we started the adoption process because I have a lot of adoption in my family, and he and I had decided before we got married that we would want to adopt at some point. We just didn't realize it was going to be so early
mm-hmm.
in our relationship. So we started through an agency. We had a failed adoption a couple months after our profile went up. And that was in January of 2013, and then in May of 2013, our daughter was born and into our family via adoption.
Mm-hmm.
We have a fantastic relationship with her birth mother, so
that's beautiful.
And mm-hmm. We were very, very lucky. And then when we were thinking about growing our family, Jan and I both got nervous that we might have another failed adoption, and then we were nervous that our second child, if we adopted, wouldn't have as great of a relationship with his or her birth parents.
Mm-hmm.
So we just went in for a consultation to see what Dr. Kowalczyk, what you could maybe offer us, and you were very positive and
Thank
made
you.
Us feel very comfortable about it.
Well, you're pretty awesome, too, you guys. It's fun to work with you.
Jan, when did you know it was the right time to seek help?
So, as Jamie mentioned, we're going through the process of determining the cause for the infertility, and just before our first daughter, Addie, was born, before we were paired up with the birth mom, mm-hmm. The urologist I was seeing through the DMC, he was able to identify the issue within literally the first 5 minutes, and then had follow-up tests to confirm. And then at the end of that consultation, he mentioned that because of my age and Jamie's age, assuming that there's no issues from Jamie's side, we're ideal candidates for IVF. Like mm-hmm. IVF would be the only option for us to conceive biologically. So at that point, it was a matter of us both being comfortable with going through that process, knowing that it's a pretty serious procedure to go through for the female. Mm-hmm. So it's something that I wanted Jamie to be comfortable with before we decide. I never wanted to pressure her into it. Something that we wanted to know that that's the best way to grow our family, given all options available.
So now you have a beautiful family, one child through adoption, one through IVF. How does that feel, and what would you tell couples who are considering and opening their hearts like you and Jan to all of these choices? You know, how does it feel, and how do you share this with your kids, and what would you tell others?
I love the way that our family has become. We have quite the story to tell to both of our girls. Our adoption is very, very open. We talk about it frequently mm-hmm. with Addie, our older daughter. She knows who her birth mother is, and Ellie will know her, too. Ellie is our new baby through IVF. She'll know who Addie's birth mother is as well. And I just say you need to be open, and this is a very, very personal decision for any couple. And adoption's not right for everybody, and IVF is not right for everybody. It needs to be right, what feels right for your family. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to say what one person should do or not, but
right.
We definitely think that we made the right decisions at the right time for us. We did what we felt comfortable with at the time, and it's worked out wonderfully. So
as a guy, a lot of times, you know, we think about and are aware of what the female patient goes through. But yourself, Jan, you had talked to a urologist and you knew that this was the best avenue to have a family. So again, you've opened your heart to adoption and IVF. What advice would you think you might want to tell the guys listening tonight who are going through a similar journey that you are? Any words of wisdom for them?
Yeah, sure. So a few years ago, I actually heard like the best piece of advice, or like the best, viewpoint on fatherhood. And it was a former boss of mine who mentioned that fatherhood is 50% instinct and 50% ego. And going into the, like, going to the stage of our marriage where we wanted to start a family, it was, at first it was kind of hard to come to grips with the fact that, like, I wouldn't be able to father a child without intervention. And I mean, you see so many people out there, like so many families where, I mean, pardon me for speaking candidly, but you see fathers who father multiple kids. I mean, four, five, six. I mean, I don't want to stereotype, but not the best fathers where it's like, you know what, I'd give anything to be able to have my own kid. Yet you see plenty of terrible fathers who are like play no role in their kid's life. Mm-hmm. And then you realize that being a father is not about being able to like conceive. It's more about the presence that you have in that kid's life. So getting over that part of it, like the ego part of it, I mean, seeing how comfortable Jamie was with adoption, it was more about, you know what, I'm going to be able to see my reflection in my child's, like, and it doesn't have to be biological. But then funny thing is, like, the first time I held Addie, the first thing I noticed was that she has a cleft chin just like me. So Jamie likes to say that everything happens for a reason, or if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And it's like at that point it really hit. But then, yeah, I guess that's the biggest thing. It's like, don't worry about not being able to see a reflection of yourself and your child if you choose to go with adoption versus IVF. It has to be something that's right for your family. It's like being a father, the biggest thing is just being a strong presence in your kid's life, teaching them how to be reckless, playing with them, doing whatever you can. And then you're going to see like your personality in your kids.
Well, what a great message.
Yes.
That was beautiful. A lot of times we don't hear the guy's perspective. So what is your older daughter? How does she love her little sister? Tell me about that.
She is so in love with her little sister. When I first found out I was pregnant, she insisted it was a sister. And I said, well, it may not be a sister, Addie. We'll see. And then, of course, when we found out she was a girl, Addie was ecstatic. And as soon as she came all the time, when is Eleanor going to be born?
Aww.
When is she going to be home? And when we brought her home, it was just love at first sight. She loves her sister so, so much, wants to hold her all the time. And now her new thing is like picking her up when I'm not watching, which is terrifying.
What's the age difference?
She's 3 years. She just turned 3.
Okay.
Oh, she's old enough.
Jamie. I'm from a pediatric ICU nurse.
Right. I'm just joking. Don't write me. I was just wondering, one last question. How was it working with Dr. Carroll and the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health?
They were all phenomenal. Like I said, when we went in for a consultation, I was, of course, crying in the office, worried about what Addie would think later on if we had a biological child and then her. And Dr. Qualtrics just came up to me and gave me the biggest hug and reassured me at that point I knew everything was going to be okay. And biology means nothing, right? It's all about how you love your kids and how you teach them. And she's so right. And everybody in the office was just so supportive every single time I went in, and I went in a lot leading up to this, and I got nothing but positive feedback. And when I had to bring Addie into some of my appointments, everybody was so, so sweet to her. So I have nothing but good things to say about that office, everyone in it.
Well,
you
and a lot of other people. Thank you so much, Jamie and Jan, for joining us tonight. What an inspirational story.
Thank you guys so much.
Enjoy the summer with the kids.
Oh, we will. Thank you.
Take care, you guys.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Today's Woman Radio Show with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk of the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. I'm your co-host, Dana Clark. Now it's time for A Day in the Life. Man, so much going on in May. It's a busy month. First, let's talk about National Women's Health Week that begins on Mother's Day each year. It's an observance led by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the goal is to empower women to make their health a priority. So what else is going on in May? We got a whole list of things coming down that we want to talk about in this segment.
So the importance of that National Women's Health Week, and I have to tell you, I was not aware of it. I'm an OBGYN. I'm a fertility specialist. I had no clue there was a National Women's Health Week, and it's now in its 17th year.
Okay.
So I wanted to bring it up for a couple of reasons. Number one is, you know, it starts on the Mother's Day every year, and it we did a conference, if you remember, in April about empowering healthier women. So I think it's really nice to reiterate, especially in the month of May, that we women really need to take care of ourselves, not in a selfish way. But if we don't take care of ourselves, it's going to be hard for us to take care of others.
Right.
And, you know, the conference, as well as with that week, they highlighted things such as, you know, getting the recommended screening and preventative care.
Right. Good month to just like schedule everything at once, right?
Right. And may not have the appointment, but maybe
that
week, the week of Mother's Day, you make that commitment to get your annual exam
get
your mammogram appointment in, get your primary care appointment in, you know, do those things, get your blood drawn.
Right.
To know
just
what your cholesterol is, you know, to know if
before
you're
summer.
Exactly.
You got to be ready and then you start your workout plan.
There you go. There you go. And speaking of that, get moving.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's tips on our website, I believe, from Adrian, who owns Move Strong, about how to have some cool, easy ways to get moving. Do like my PA does, squats when you're brushing your teeth, or, you know, do lunges from the dining room to the bedroom, park in the farthest place, take the stairs, eating healthy foods. I mean, it's important. You know, our anniversary was May 22nd. So it's, you know, we had everything not good for you. And but,
well,
you know,
that's a special day.
23 years, I deserve a little
cheesecake. Yes, you do. Congratulations.
And alcohol and
you
all
should.
That stuff. Mental health, same thing. You know, it's important that we take that time to just de-stress and take the even a few minutes, 10 minutes, to just have a cup of coffee and enjoy nature and things like that. What about you?
Well, you know, power naps always work too. You know, make sure you get plenty of rest, they say, because if you sleep more, your weight is better, which I'm still trying to figure that out. But if I just slept all day, then I'd be really thin. But I can't do that for some reason.
Is
that because you're not eating when you're sleeping?
Maybe, but the weight, I think part of the sleep and the weight relationship, I've heard a couple of things. Number one is if you don't sleep well, you're a little more cranky, irritable, and therefore
you eat more.
There you go. You don't have the same discipline as you normally would. Plus, I think there's some hormonal manipulations there's a hormone leptin that is altered, and then a stress hormone, cortisol, goes up, and that allows you to have that fight or flight response where you conserve energy. And I think all those things in combination affect that connection with lack of sleep and weight.
Okay, well, I knew it was something smart that you had to break it down. So anyway, now that it's getting warm, just, you know, I'm trying to get back on my little workout plan. Last year, I did a couch to 5K. And I did, this year, it's hard for me to run for some reason.
Yeah.
Last year, I was able to do it. So this year, I'm just trying different stuff. I've been walking a lot since it's getting warm outside. So as long as you do something, as long as you get moving, try to eat a little bit healthier, you know, it's the little things that add up. So,
well, and the Monday, what is that? The slow ride that's in
downtown? Yes, I heard about that. I have to try that.
Oh, me too. I had relatives of mine that were biking in our neighborhood this weekend, and the slow ride sounds so fun. What a great thing to do on a Monday.
Get the bike out, dust it off. I have to put air in my tire. So after I do all that, then we should be good. So now May is also National Foster Care Awareness Month. And as we know, many kids are just waiting for a loving home, as we've heard from Jamie and Jan tonight on adoption. Mm-hmm. And they also had another child, IVF. So it's something that definitely can be done, and we can check into it by just going to the National Foster Care Navigator and they have a program at 855-MISH-KIDS, or you can check out the website at fcnp.org. And so that's also another option.
And I tell that to my patients as well, is if you open your hearts to these opportunities to build your family, mm-hmm. Foster care is another beautiful option for you to show wonderful love to children. And as we, you and I both know, many times the foster care will then lead to mm-hmm. an adoption. And what a good thing for kids that really need a loving home.
They just need love.
Absolutely.
And there's so many people out there who want to provide that for them. So then it's also Memorial Day.
Yes.
Coming
How'd
up.
That happen?
I don't know.
Really?
It's going to be June.
What is up
before
with
we know
this?
It.
May.
I'm looking forward to having the day off, should mm-hmm. I say. Are mm-hmm. you having the day off?
I'm very.
Is the office closed?
Yes. Yes.
yes, I hope.
Our IVF starts 2 days after that. But I'm okay. very honored to say that we are going, my son's birthday is Friday, okay. May 27th.
Okay.
So we're going up to celebrate. And then we also, my dad's turning 80 years young on Saturday.
Okay.
So we're having a very beautiful event for him the whole weekend. So
that'd be great.
Yeah. And he's 80 years young. God bless you, Dad, Frank. And I just think I'm so blessed to have him.
Yes,
and
you are.
My whole family are going to take him somewhere very, very special.
Okay.
And enjoy the whole weekend.
And happy birthday, son. What's your son's name?
Johnny.
Johnny.
JFK.
Stay out of trouble, Johnny.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. He just came back from Michigan State. They still got to reroute the now you're at mom's house.
Yeah, okay? That's a change.
You're not in the frat anymore,
that's
dude.
That's different.
You are now under my roof.
That's different. But we also honor our military, mm-hmm. and we can't forget that, you know, that that's what the day is really about. And we appreciate all they do and all their sacrifices.
Yes, and God
for our
bless.
Country.
God bless everyone who has fought for our country and allowed us the freedoms that we have. We probably, most mm-hmm. of us, wake up every morning and not realize
yes.
that we can decide what coffee to drink, mm-hmm. what show to watch, what
freedom.
Car to drive. And if it isn't for the men and women in the military, the veterans and the active mm-hmm. People who risk their lives and sacrifice their being with their families, I just want to wish all of you a wonderful Memorial weekend, and God bless you, and I pray that you're safe.
Yes. So information about our sponsor, if you'd like to get in touch with Dr. Carol Kowalczyk, it's the Michigan Center for Fertility and Women's Health. You can call 248-864-5900. That's 248-864-5900. And we'll see you next time. With that,
you go, girl.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little.